scientists often get a little sheepish when asked if one storm is related to climate change. It's hard to tell. But when you look back at a year of intense storms, you get a better sense of the big picture. Case in point, 2019.
Historic flooding in Nebraska. At least three people have died. More water is on the way. 15 states are under watches and warnings as floodwaters rush downstream.
A powerful tropical cyclone has made landfall in Mozambique. This is the first time in known history that country has been hit with two cyclones in one season.
Today, Germany and Poland recorded their highest ever temperatures for June, and France could hit an all-time record high this week.
The Amazon rainforest has been burning for 3 weeks, sending cities up to 1,700 miles away into darkness.
Well, for a look back at the year in climate change, we're joined by environmental journalist Zoe Schlanger. Zoe, welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we just heard about a lot of extreme weather events from the last year. Do you think that the media have been linking those stories to climate change more in the last year than in the past?
Absolutely. I think 2019 was really the year that you could not have an extreme event go by without the news media, but also scientists outwardly connecting it to climate change. And that's a major shift. 10 years ago, scientists would almost never do such a thing. And part of that was because of attribution science, the science of how we can say now that climate change has made a flood X amount times worse than it would have been without climate change, that sort of thing. That science has gotten incredibly good in the last just year or two. And that's because computing power has advanced so much and our understanding of some of these systems has as well.
So it's easier for scientists to say this is definitely worse because of climate change.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, one of the other things that may have helped the media come around is a big swell in climate activism. Let's listen to one of the most famous activists at this point. That would be teenager Greta Thunberg.
You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet, I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
Greta Thunberg speaking there at the United Nations. Do you think that that kind of activism has shifted the conversation?
I think it absolutely has. You saw some of the biggest marches in public history around climate change. There was 4 million people out in hundreds of cities around the world in September. The level of young people engaging in this issue now is really shaken. I know that adults in my life, and I think leaders have also started paying attention, absolutely shaken us all to our cores. But I think it's also far beyond Greta at this point. And she herself has talked about not wanting to be the absolute center of this. You have teenagers becoming major activists like Jamie Margolin and Isra Hirsi. You have Zero Hour and the Sunrise Movement. These young people organizations are really taking this issue by storm.
Now, we've seen a number of major climate change reports come out this year on biodiversity, the effects of climate change on the poor. What were some of the most notable of those to you?
Absolutely. There's so many more than we can possibly talk about. It was a huge year for studies. I think the one you mentioned, the UN Biodiversity Report, finding that 1 million plant and animal species are threatened with extinction on our current climate trajectory is a big one. The other huge one I'd point out is the UN Cryosphere and Oceans Report, looking at ice and water, that basically found there's already a monumental change to these environments, which cover about 80% of the world's surface. It also looked at sea level rise and flooding, and it found we are headed to much more than 3 feet of sea level rise by 2100, which expands the number of coastal cities that would be flooded on a regular basis. Each 100-year flood, for example, is due to come every single year by 2050 in more than a dozen major cities in the world, including places like L.A. and Savannah and Sydney.
Well, and we certainly saw a lot of flooding in the last year across the Midwest, devastating storms in Mozambique and across East Africa. There was Hurricane Dorian, which devastated parts of the Bahamas. And then, of course, we had wildfires in Alaska, in California, in the Amazon, in Europe. What was the toll of these events? Or was this a year in which we hit a turning point on how severe these events were?
I think we absolutely did. I think one really telling anecdote or one detail in this is the fires in Greenland. You haven't seen fires of this scale in Greenland before. It was to the point where other countries were sending their firefighters to help Greenland's firefighters because Greenland didn't have the capacity itself to handle these things. The fires are one thing, and then there's also the heat waves that were often accompanying these fires. I know in Europe, the heat waves were made 100 times more likely, and that's going back to this attribution science, and 100 times more likely due to anthropogenic climate change.
Well, and just as when you have fires in Greenland, there aren't enough firefighters to deal with it, when you have a heat wave in parts of Europe, many people don't have air conditioning because over the course of centuries, they haven't needed it.
Absolutely. And air conditioning is actually a hidden and rising storyline throughout climate change. As the weather warms, more and more people will begin adopting air conditioning that didn't have it before. And air conditioning itself produces quite a bit of emissions. So it's what we'd call a positive feedback loop, which is not positive in the traditional sense at all.
Well, let's talk about the reaction from governments. Here is the UN chief, Antonio Guterres, speaking at a climate action summit this year.
Science also tells us it is not too late. We can do it. Limiting warming to 1.5 degrees is still possible. But it will require fundamental transformations in all aspects of society. How we grow food, use land, fuel our transport, and power our economies.
But then you also have leaders, including the President of the United States, who do not see climate change as a major threat to society and aren't cooperating with efforts to combat it. Here's President Trump speaking in November.
I announced the withdrawal of the United States from the horrible, costly, one-sided Paris Climate Accord.
That Paris Climate Accord involved almost every country on Earth. Where are we now without the United States being involved on the goals of that climate accord?
Yeah, so we've just gotten out of the most recent conference of the parties on the Paris Agreement. And it was the last time the U.S. would be at the table for the foreseeable future because of being pulled out of the Paris Agreement. And we saw the U.S., along with several other of the wealthiest nations, completely block any real progress towards making more ambitious climate goals a reality. Guterres called that a massive missed opportunity. We are not on track to evade catastrophic climate warming at the moment. A major UN study out in November found that we're actually on track for 3.2 degrees Celsius of warming if every country fulfills all its pledges. That's well above the 2-degree threshold at which scientists and governments agree it would threaten the livability of life on Earth. We would have to cut emissions 7% every single year starting next year until 2030, which would be the amount of 55% emissions lower than 2018 levels to have any hope of reaching a below 2-degree C world.
So does that mean that 2019 we'll look back on and say this was the moment when we went from trying to stop climate change from happening to the moment when we started to realize the things that we're just going to have to deal with now as a result of climate change because it's too late to stop it to some degree anyway?
Absolutely. It's definitely the year that cities and local areas are going to have to start really investing heavily in adaptation measures. We're talking about seawalls. There's a lot of discussion this year about something called managed retreat, which is when and how you help a population move away ethically from their homes that are near imminent sea level rise. That's absolutely on the horizon for the next 2-3 years.
Well, and that's happening in a lot of places around the world. But even here in the U.S., we spoke recently with somebody in the Florida Keys who is just waiting for a buyout from the state so that she can leave her property there because it's not even worth building on it anymore because of sea level rise.
Absolutely. And that's going to cause a lot of internal climate migration. It's something you hear talked about a lot as climate refugees, about people coming over borders. That is absolutely true, but it will also be happening within countries themselves. You'll see people moving away from coastal cities, either by choice or by government buyout.
That is environmental reporter Zoe Schlanger. Zoe, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Great to be here.